We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Roto Grinders today. I'm Jordan Cooper, a.k.a. Blender Ed, Blender HD. You're going to follow me on Twitter. And it's Friday, April 5th. We're taking a look at a 13-fight MMA card, UFC fight night, something. It's some number, right? 91, yeah. Maybe, or something. It's something like that. Hit that thumbs up button on your way in the door. Give me those thummy thumbs. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the notification bell to know when we go live. We got tons of stuff today on the channel. We got baseball. We got basketball. We got college, but we got college stuff. We got PGA and soccer and everything. So click on that link in the description. Join us here at Roto Grinders Premium. We have a new deal. You get 6 months of Roto Grinders Combo Premium. We'll give you $250 off. So go check that out there. Joined as usual on Fridays for the UFC cards. It's John Breslin, aka Squirrel Patrol. Don't worry, based on last week's card, I want an eye poke you or nut shot you, even though apparently you're able to do it. That was last week, two fights in a row, and they couldn't even, like, it feels like now there's no such thing as rules in the UFC. It's like whatever they feel like applying, and what it was a TKO, then it was a technical decision. And then they have a replay and they don't bother. I don't think it matters that much for DFS. I mean, it's out of our control no matter what. But if I was a fighter, me and you were fighting, right? And we were going by UFC rules. I want you to know, I will get my free eye poke and nut shot in.
Yeah, I said it on Wednesday. Like, I'm worried somebody's going to bring a knife out and just stab the other guy, right? Like, in the first minute of the first round, why would you not? Because they're going to look at the replay. Oh, I don't know if it was a knife. It's hard to say. You know, he's bleeding. I don't know. I guess they did stop that fight when the guy bit the other guy. that was 2 weeks ago. So at least they got that right. You know, there were the teeth marks on the guy's arm. They kind of had to stop it. The eye pokes. I actually think it has a little bit of a DFS effect because, like, there's increased variance. You know, you'd never know. And so, like, we see these guys, you might look at them, you know, next to each other, face off or whatever, and you think, well, that, you know, this huge guy is going to win. Not necessarily. Like, you know, I go back to, like, the Jacob Malkoon fight last summer where, you know, he was the biggest favorite on the card, like, minus 800 or whatever. And I think he was fighting, like, maybe Cody Garbrandt or whatever, you know, and he just took him down immediately and just started pounding on him. And it was like, oh, this is, you know, he's going to demolish him. And he just kept punching him in the back of the head and got in medical disqualification, first round win for Cody Garbrandt or, you know, whoever the plus 1200 underdog was. So yeah, you got to keep that kind of variance in mind when you're making your UFC lineups. That's why I like writing an article on underdogs. Cause I think it's the best DFS sport to take long shots on.
Well, we're going to talk about tomorrow's card. It's a fight night card. It's a lot of low level stuff, which means the variance goes up even more. You can see here at Lineup HQ, we do have our fantasy point projections, our projected ownership. As of now, This will be updated tomorrow. We also have the sim output, right? Me and John love looking at optimal rates, especially for large field tournaments. We'll have the Ground and Pound podcast with Mike and Liam. That'll be out for premium members, as well as the expert survey and Squirrels takedowns. Brendan Allen versus Chris Curtis is the main event. 8,900 versus 7,300. I'm never a big fan of Chris Curtis fights. I mean, Chris Curtis is basically a one-dimensional striker, but a pretty decent one, right? Brendan Allen has wrestling in his back pocket, but a lot of times we've seen he has no problem, trading on his feet. He's not bad. He's not a bad striker. So the upside to me in a 5-round fight with Chris Curtis is with Brendan Allen, because if he does wrestle, I mean, a 5-round decision, he could easily score over 100 points. Chris Curtis, on the other hand, like outside of a finish, his 100-plus point potential is low, but he's also the underdog. So if he gets 10 points per round striking and the 30-point decision win, 80 points at 7,300 could still be optimal on this slate, especially when we do have a bunch of decent-sized favorites. I'm assuming, based on our fantasy point projections, that both Allen and Curtis will show up high in optimal rates on this slate. But I mean, there's a whole bunch of fighters here with very good inside the distance lines. Are you more likely? I know you're playing a lot of lineups, right? I play somewhere at small field stuff, as well as a decent, maybe 50 large field lineups. As of right now, before our simulations are done, do you think that you're going to be more inclined to roster the 5-round main event or less inclined?
Maybe a little bit less than our ownership is showing, but not much less. I do like the main event. I don't know if I like Brendan Allen at 45%. I might go like a little bit under that, because he's not some kind of super strong favorite. The story would be different if the line was flipped or if the styles were flipped, because like you kind of said, like Chris Curtis is just a striker. The problem is, he's the underdog, and he's a plausible underdog, but he's also the cheaper underdog. So yeah, 7,300, he can get there in a win pretty easily. He doesn't have to do much. All he has to do is strike. Brendan Allen is the more expensive fighter, being the favorite at 8,900. But again, he has the takedown upside. So if it goes like a 5-round Brendan Allen demolition, he's going to score extremely well and probably land on the winning lineup. I think the fight was plus money to get outside the third round, but favored to enter the third round. So basically, it's kind of projected by Vegas odds to end in the third round, which doesn't do us much good. It makes it just like any other kind of fight, but it does have some possibility of going the 5-round. So I think you have to take that into consideration. This is a card, I think it's kind of a fun card for DFS, because there is not a lot of differentiation between a lot of these fighters. We don't see the massive favorites. And anybody with a two-thirds chance of winning in the first round or anything like that. So I think the fact that this fight could go an extra couple of rounds, you have to take that in consideration and maybe give the fighters a little bit of a boost. But I think we're showing Brendan Allen as our highest owned fighter. So I may be a little bit under the field at 45%, but not much under the field.
Well, let's take a look at the fighters at the top of the chart. Right, I'm bringing up my little spreadsheet here, which it's not finished yet. But I have the odds from yesterday, or the ownership and projection we have here at Roto Grinders. Basically, we're gonna look at the 9K first, and then we're gonna talk about Alexander Hernandez. Let's take care of Alexander Hernandez first. He's minus 205 to win, minus 110 inside the distance. He is the best inside the distance line for the salary. He's facing Damon Jackson, who isn't the epitome of durable. But Alex Hernandez is not the epitome of reliable. The thing is that Alex Hernandez can wrestle and Damon Jackson can wrestle. It could stall out a bit. I mean, we have him at 39%. I think it's quite possible that Alex Hernandez may end up being as owned or even more owned than Brendan Allen. How thrilled are you? Because like outside of like these guys, like this, the mid range is full of fights that are more likely to go the distance. Like that, we don't have that 8,200, 8,000 fight where it's like someone's getting knocked out. One of these guys is going to show up in the optimal. One scoring 120, one scoring zero. Most of these mid-range fights are probable decisions. All of the finishing upside is typically at the top. So getting minus 110 inside the distance at minus 205 is a value comparison. He's not far off win odds-wise from these 9K guys. I'll ask you the same question. Are you more likely to be over or under Alex Hernandez? And if how much Damon Jackson would you have as far as leverage off of him? Because at 8,700 at these betting lines, I'm going to assume when our simulations come out later today or early tomorrow, Alex Hernandez will be one of the top five on the list.
Yeah. I kind of like Damon Jackson in this fight, you know, as a leverage pivot. His win odds aren't that bad. About 36% chance of winning the fight. And a greater than 10-1 shot of winning in the first round at only 7,500. I'm having a hard time finding favorites that I like on this card, right? Good thing I write a article on the underdogs. There's no reason, particular reason to think like Alex Hernandez is going to like dominate this fight. Damon Jackson just got his hair done. Got some hair plugs. This is the talk of Twitter. If you look at do some research on this fight, like Damon Jackson that looks totally different than he did in his last fight. But I think people are going to have a hard time like clicking on that name because he's lost two fights in a row. I think he's a great leverage point. If he's coming in at like a single digit ownership mark, I might be multiple over the field. If he's like less than 10%, I might own him at 20. There's no reason to think that he can't win this fight. I'll take him at super low ownership. Alex Hernandez has had some high scoring wins in his UFC career, but some wins where he hasn't probably even paid off an $8,700 price tag. I'm not super down on Alex Hernandez, but I do really like the idea of being over the field on Damon Jackson. And if that causes me to be a little bit under the field on Alex Hernandez, I'm totally fine with it. Again, like there's really not much that stands out on this card. So if Alex Hernandez is the guy where ownership starts to concentrate around him, that's great. I'm the under the field.
Well, you're talking about you like the underdogs, a fight to target on this slate for not going to make it to scorecards. It's probably Charlie Campbell at 9,000 versus Trevor Peak at 7,200. Charlie Campbell's only a minus 175 favorite at 9,000, which is going to push down maybe some of the ownership. We have him at 37%. I'm not sure if he's going to be that high, only because Trevor Peak is plus 150 to win and plus 215 inside the distance, which is a great price for 7,200. I think a lot of people on the low end, the two outside of Kurt, I think the three underdogs that are going to be the most owned are going to be Chris Curtis, the main event underdog, Trevor Peak, and Dan Argueta at 7,400 against Gene Matsumoto, who at 8,800 has a plus 315 inside the distance. This Charlie Campbell-Trevor Peak fight, I'm assuming when Sims come out, Trevor Peak is going to be high on that list because his win condition is typically knocks you out in the first round. If he doesn't knock you out in the first round, he's probably not optimal. But the betting odds would say that his first round win odds are 22%. Yeah. I know you're the type of person that's like, well, I'm going to have at least 22% of him because if he wins in the first round, he probably scores 100 and he makes the optimal lineup, right?
Yeah, I think he is going to be a popular underdog, but I'm going to be right there with the field because you can't get away from his style. I saw him in person in Jacksonville, the card I went to for the UFC card in Jacksonville last June. I think he's fought again since then. He lost that fight. He just keeps like coming forward, and there's not a lot of downtime in Trevor Peak fights. And I think Charlie Campbell is a little bit of the same way. So this is a great fight to target. Probably makes it the fight most likely to get canceled post-lock, because I think a lot of people are going to go there, and then you'll see everybody screaming on Twitter. But yeah, I'll be screaming right with them, because I like Trevor Peak at 7,200. I agree. Like that first round finish line stands out for a $7,200 fighter. I've seen him like at plus 350. Yeah, so about 20-22% of chance of winning in the first round at 7,200. I think you need to like roster him at those out at that like implied probability at least. Like his Trevor Peak style makes Charlie Campbell appealing too, because like Trevor Peak is just standing there not caring if he gets hit. I can't believe Trevor Peak's last two fights have gone to decision, and I can't believe they haven't scored higher. But I'll take the risk because yeah, his style just creates a lot of fantasy points.
Then we got all these 9K options. We got Walter Walker, who's I believe the brother of Johnny Walker, at 9,400. Melissa Mullins at 9,300, Alex Morono at 9,200, Ignacio Bahamondes at 9,100. Bahamondes has the best inside the distance line on the slate at minus 150 against Christos Giagos. I'm not someone that necessarily considers Bahamondes to be like the style of fighter that is great in DFS. He's just like a long striker. Like he's doesn't do much wrestling. Morono plus 110 inside the distance. He's kind of more of a, like, some of these fights he has volume and some he doesn't, but pretty much a striker. Walter Walker, minus 130 inside the distance, primarily striking, right? Melissa Mullins, on the other hand, against Nora Cornell. Melissa Mullins is a wrestler. I'm not sure how... I mean, she's minus 130 inside the distance. And I don't know, in her last fight, she felt more like a Jacob Malkoon type of can get the takedowns and then just doesn't really have a submission game, I guess, or just lies there, doesn't advance that much. I mean, Melissa Mullins is facing someone that has, I would think, like absolutely no like mat game, like literally. Like basically just a power striker in Nora Cornell. I don't want to put like anything in your any words in your mouth, but you know me. I always say this every week. My bread is buttered on the 9K female fighters that people don't like clicking on. Walker is facing Bresky. Bresky has UFC experience. He's not a good fighter, but he has UFC experience. Court McGee sucks. Right? I mean, he's old. I mean, he's not bad, but he's not good. Christos Giagos, not good, but UFC experience. But, like, Melissa Mullins could turn out to be a minus 2,000 favorite in this spot. And especially if she's not, if it's possible that she's going to have 14 minutes of ground control or something like that. Minus 130 inside the distance for a female fighter at 9,300 is pretty damn good. We have her as the least owned projected fighter in that range. What are your thoughts about all these 9K fighters and what you're more or less likely to do with them?
Yeah, I think we're seeing it in a pretty similar way. I think Melissa Mullins, Melissa Dixon. I think she used to go by Melissa Dixon. Now it's Melissa Mullins. There's no reason like she can't outscore the other fighters in this range. So if she's going to be the lowest owned one, great. I'll be over the field. The Walter Walker thing, I think he's going to draw some popularity. He's a heavyweight fighter. He's the highest priced fighter on the slate. So I think like on a card where there's not a lot of like differentiation, I think a lot of people will just look at the pricing and go like, well, Walter Walker, He's the most expensive fighter. There's some underdogs that I like. I like Trevor Peak. So I've got the savings. So I'm going to go to Walter Walker. Like in my hand builds that I've done just like throughout the week, so many times I'm ending up with like 9,800, like 10,000. Because I like the underdogs so much. Now I can fit in Walter Walker. But like there's no reason to click on his name versus like Melissa Mullins. Lucas Bresky, Walter Walker fight, like the odds on Bresky have actually been going up. So I think he's only 6,800. He's the cheapest fighter on the slate, but he's actually got like the fourth worst win odds, if that makes sense. You're getting like some comparative win equity for that $6,800. And he's a fighter that could get first round finish. His odds aren't that strong. Let me make sure it's about 10%, 9-10% chance of getting the first round finish. But that's not terrible at 6,800. So actually kind of like Lucas Bresky as an underdog, you're getting like some kind of win equity at 6,800. And yeah, I like the idea of going to Melissa Mullins and over Walter Walker. Alex Morono is like not my favorite fighter, but yeah, Court McGee might kind of be finished. So there's a pretty sizable age gap there. Court McGee, I think, has lost his last couple of fights. Lost his last couple of fights via first round knockout. Like that's not good. So good matchup for Alex Morono. Bahamonez, he's lost as a big favorite before, I think, in his last fight. But he's shown the ability to score well in the UFC sometimes, not always. So 9,100, I'll probably be right around the field. Like, don't have a strong take there. Like, there is the possibility that he can throw decent volume, attempt some takedowns. So I don't know. Yeah, I'll go there. He's not like the worst fighter in the range. I probably like Melissa Mullins, the best out of the 9K fighters. And then maybe Charlie Campbell, just because I think that Campbell peak fight is going to be high paced.
Right. I mean, my general point is that Melissa Mullins has multiple ways for 100. Because at 9,000, you pretty much need 100 points. And Walker, Morono, and Bahamonez, unless it's going to be one of these like beatdowns, like it's essentially, you got 5 minutes. Can he get a finish in the first round? Because it's unlikely that, unless it's a beatdown, right? Multiple knockdowns, ref doesn't stop the fight, even though, 2 minutes of ground and pound and 7 million strikes, which that's the variance of DFS. Eye pokes, nut shots, who the hell knows? So to me, I view them all very similarly. And like you said, I was building some dummy lineups, and a lot of my lineups are like 49 sixes and 49 sevens where, yeah, I could get up to Walker, but I take Mullins, or I just take Bahamonez, or just like, it's like, I don't necessarily need all the salary, but it may not be the type of slate where I'm leaving 2K on the table, because then we get into this mid-range stuff. What do you like in the mid-range? We got the Norma Dumont fight, who, to me, good luck. Good luck. If you want to take Jermaine Duran to me for a win equity, sure, but like Norma Dumont fights are awful for DFS. She's plus 400 inside the distance. I'm not all that enamored by that. I even think the Piero Rodriguez-Cynthia Calvillo fight, it depends on what Cynthia Calvillo shows up, right, there. I think people will go to Victor Hugo at 8,200 because he's getting Pedro Falco is a last-minute replacement. But the line isn't that wide. Right. It's still like Hugo's still only like a minus 130 favorite. It's just that the inside the distance lines of these fights are just like, if anyone, truthfully, maybe Dylan Butka is minus 145 to win 8,500, but at least like he can wrestle. Like, is he good? No. I mean, this is low level stuff anyway. See, Cesar Almeida is more of a kickboxer. Can Cesar Almeida come in and knock out Dylan Butka? Sure, okay. But he got 5 minutes to get 100 points. If Butka could actually have success wrestling, 8,500, I feel more comfortable in a three-round decision with a guy that could actually land takedowns. I mean, I'm getting to a lot of builds that are just barbell. Like, I'm ending up taking one fighter from this range. But I'm not building lineups that have two or three.
Yeah, I agree. In the mid-range, I actually like the favorites a little bit more. I like Victor Hugo's now got a little bit of win equity. It's interesting. His Fighter Alatang, I think it was, pulled out.
Alatang.
Yes. So he got a late minute, last minute kind of replacement or last few days replacement, Pedro Falco. But Falco apparently doesn't like score that well. Like, he's more of a jujitsu guy, I think. Like, he can maybe get a submission, but he's not going to get a bunch of like ground and pound, not going to get like a knockdown, anything like that. So I like Hugo a little bit. It's funny that like you almost never see like a late replacement fight where the guy just gets the same line. Usually there's something going on there. So you're getting but you are getting a little bit of like win equity then for the price on Victor Hugo, not much. Probably the guy I like most in this range is Morgan Charrier.
He's a French fighter.
So he's a French fighter. I think, you know, he's got some popularity. I think, you know, pretty good first round finish odds in the, you know, the best in this range at least. Showing him about 500, so about like 16% implied probability. Like, that's not bad for 8,300. There's just not much to go with in this range, so probably like Charrier the best. Let's see, the other fighters, like, I don't know. Yeah, Cynthia Calvillo hasn't shown much in her last few fights. Cesar Almeida, I think this is his UFC debut, I think, for both Almeida and Budka. Neither one of them had like particularly high scoring contender series fights. You can go there, like but it'd be more of an ownership play. There's no particular reason to think that they're going to post a standout score, even in a win, either of them. And priced in the mid range, that makes it a little bit more difficult to get to. Jermaine Randamie, former UFC champion. So, like, she's probably the most one I'm most interested in from the underdogs in this range, just because. She's really probably just an underdog because of her long layoff. She hasn't fought, I think, in about 3.5 years, but there's no particular reason to think she's going to show up like totally out of shape. So we'll see what kind of shape she shows up in. But yeah, she's like beat some quality UFC opponents in the past. She's put up some high scores in the UFC in the past. We just don't know, you know, 3.5 year layoff. I think she, you know, started a family. So, you know, that explains the layoff. I don't know. Yeah, I see no reason not to go there. At 7,600, that's a pretty good price tag. So yeah, she's probably the fighter I'm most interested in from the underdogs in the mid-range.
I mean, the reason not to go there is that it's a Norma Dumont fight.
Yeah.
I mean, that's can she win a decision? Sure. But I mean, am I confident she scores well? No. So that's really what it comes down to. And
yeah. At 7,600, though, that starts to not be so much of a concern, right?
Right.
Where if she's getting a you know, a decision win, and it's got some decent pace, 7,600, like, that can land on the winning lineup.
Especially if the popular underdogs lose.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we look down here, you like doing the writing up your underdogs, which will be out, what, later today or tomorrow morning, yeah. In the takedowns article. I'm assuming already you'll be writing up Trevor Peak. Yeah. I'm also assuming Dan Argueta as well. Because of the line value against Matsumoto. I mean, you mentioned Lucas Bretzky is still like, I don't think there's any underdog that's like not in play. Yeah. I mean, Court McGee comes close because.
Well,
can he win the fight? I mean, he's not going to win it and score many points. I mean, what underdogs do? I mean, what if we take a look at like that? I mean, you mentioned Damon Jackson for leverage. But are you going to take a shot at Nora Cornell against Melissa Mullins or Christos Giagos? Like, the thing about Giagos, I've played Giagos multiple times because he does have submission upside. If he could get you to the ground, he can submit you. The problem is he typically gets knocked out before then. So, like, right at that point against... Bob Mundes is not a small guy. Like, Bob Mundes is bigger than Christos Giagos. So I'm not even convinced that Giagos has that great of a path to win the fight. I mean, is there anything else down here other... I'm not a big fan of playing chalk dogs in my lineups. But it's hard. These guys do stand out much more than all the other underdogs.
So yeah, I'll go through like the underdogs I don't like because that's maybe a shorter list. But So Nora Quintanilla, I'm not super high on. She won her debut in France. She's a French fighter, so it's like they're obligated to keep her keep her around. But it was a pretty controversial decision against Jocelyn Edwards. There's maybe a little bit of home French cook in there. In her win, I think she put up less than 74 points. Like, so even at 6,900, that's like borderline kind of not getting there. Nora Quintanilla, I'm not super high on. Court McGee, we kind of discussed. I think he's like 39 years old now. Got a decent shot of having an early finish against him. So there's like not much floor there, not much like win equity for the price. I like Bresky more. Bresky's got a better chance at a lower price of winning and also putting up a higher score.
Right. And then, it's also heavyweight, John, and heavyweight is much higher variance. And just one errant shot could end the fight. So, like, I'm never opposed to taking shots on underdog heavyweights. Very similar to underdog, like, women's MMA when it's low level. Like, I don't think Quintanilla is out of the running. It's not like Melissa Mullins is great, and at least she punches hard. I mean, like, anyone that has enough power to knock someone out, especially in women's MMA, I think is worth something. So if you're gonna say Bresky has a shot, I mean, obviously he has a better line than Nora Quintanilla. That's kind of what we're looking for. That's why the Court McGee's are not as valuable. But like, what else are you looking at down here?
Yeah, I mean, well, I like Bresky. I like Trevor Peak. You know, Chris Curtis has the 5-round possibility. Like, it's not super likely. He's not really high volume. I'm maybe not as high on Chris Curtis as I would another like 5-round fighter priced at 7,300. But I think you have to at least consider rostering him with the 5-round possibility. Dan Argueta, I don't know. We'll see if he gets a lot of steam, a lot of ownership. I might prefer like pivoting to Damon Jackson. Because I don't think there's necessarily that much difference between Dan Argueta and Damon Jackson. Argueta has, I think, a big UFC score in his past. He's got like grappling upside. But like, if he starts to see a ton of ownership, I'd actually rather go like Damon Jackson or Jermaine de Randamie. I might end up writing a Dan Argueta as well. I do kind of like him because he has that possibility of being high scoring. So yeah, the underdogs I'm just not as high on are like Quintanilla, Court McGee, Christos, Yagos.
I'm still looking at Cynthia Calvillo going. If she actually decides to wrestle, she has 100 plus upside in a 3-round decision win. The problem is that she's a Ponzi scheme for this for the past 2 years. It's like you look in the past, and it's like, oh, someone that could land 6 to 8 takedowns. But she's, I wouldn't be shocked if after this fight, and she loses, that she puts the gloves on the ground. And that's never makes me confident in rostering someone that they may be going in knowing that this is their last fight. And we're not sure about it. And, you winning the last fight. I mean, sometimes you get the nice little story. 90% of the time you're going out on your back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I agree. When we do the crunch time, Mike Brown always says, like, I don't like to hear the R word, right? So we'll see, weigh-ins start here in about half an hour, and then they, generally do, like, the face-offs, press conference type stuff after that. We'll see if Cynthia, the interviews. If Cynthia Calvillo mentions the R word, then that's probably a pretty good indication of why she's here at the Apex. She's lost 4 fights in a row. I think moved from, flyweight to strawweight, and I think she's, 1-4 at strawweight after having, a pretty good flyweight run. She's getting older. I agree. Like maybe she's really, recommitted to it and she's coming in here to like restart her career, but maybe not. And maybe, maybe she's just here to retire. So if we hear anything like that, I think this is about it, but I wanted to get one last run in or something, like probably a fighter to avoid. But yeah, she does have some possibility of putting up a high score. And that's like, let me say, yeah, just for UFC, if you start doing 15, 20 lineups, I think you should be rostering every single fighter in at least one of those lineups. The fighters I'd be least interested in rostering, though, you know, yeah, probably are like Court McGee, Court Cronoli, Calvillo, it's like 7,800. That's starting to get a little bit pricey for a fighter that I might just be here to retire.
Well, John, you'll have your takedowns article later today or tomorrow morning. I'm assuming later today. We'll have the Ground and Pound podcast up. You'll have it later today?
I've been told it'll come out later today. I haven't started it yet. Yeah.
Oh, you've been told. Okay. We also have all the event breakdown, expert survey, the Ground and Pound podcast. We got the simulation tool, optimal percentages for DraftKings, everything here for premium members. So join us, but behind the paywall, where we're all hanging out, getting our premium content. You get access to Lineup HQ. You want to build 150 lineups? You want to build 3 lineups? You want to look at our projections, our ownership, everything. Roto Grinders Combo Premium Package. Go click in the link in the description. And John, you'll be on Crunch Time tomorrow. It's an early card. It's a 3 p.m. Eastern card. So Crunch Time is at what? 2 p.m.?
I think 2 p.m., three-man booth. So that should be a lot of fun. On Crunch Time later today, actually, for NBA. I think I'm like getting on Crunch Time right around the time that MLB locks, because we got a little bit of an early MLB lock today at 6:40, I think. 6:45. I think 6:40. And then got NBA lock. NBA is still going on. It's getting to be that crazy, nutty time of year in NBA, late regular season. So on Crunch Time today, and then Crunch Time tomorrow for UFC.
And if you want to try out some of our premium stuff, 3 days, $19.99. So if you want to try it out for this weekend, for MMA, for NBA, for MLB, if you want to try it out for free, we got the Pick'em tool, right? If you're playing on Prize Picks or Underdog and you want to use our statistical projections here at Roto Grinders to find plus EV opportunities on those Pick'em sites, that's free today. It's Freebie Friday. So free Pick'em tool. So if you go there, that should be open for the public, not for non-premium people. But that's normally a premium feature. It's something that I use. I use our projections. I already have. John, I already have. Let's see. It's 11:30 in the morning, and I already have 82 bets in for MLB. Is that a lie? It's going to be doubled by the time the I mean, we have some early games, so maybe today I only end up with like 130 bets. But yeah, I just go whole hog on our projections and the bat projections, yeah. And anything with an edge, I just scattershot. And first week has gone very, very well.
Yeah, I feel like there might be a better like projection edge early in the season. Like I think stuff like starts to like kind of normalize, and I think maybe the books get a little bit better with their early lines. Some of these early lines, like just looking at like the simple stuff, like pitcher strikeouts stuff, like pretty wide gaps across the books. So if you're like using some kind of like line comparison tool, like and you find something like where the projection, like where the bat projections are showing there's an edge, like you can get a big edge early in the season because like there's wide gaps between the books.
Yep. So you could do that. Join me with that. And John will be on tomorrow on MMA Crunch Time. We got NBA, MLB. Scorpio Joel will be on that also. He's on everything, yep. Right? Be on that later today. So hit that thumbs up button on your way out the door. Hit the subscribe button if you're new here. And hit the notification bell to always know when we go live. I'll be watching WrestleMania over the weekend. So I'm not even... This card is early enough that... That 3 o'clock, I can watch the beginning of the card because WrestleMania starts at 7. So it's a big, big wrestling weekend for me. So I'll be making my lineups and then figuring out who won, who got nutshotted, who got eye poked, what fights were scratched after lock. I'll find all that out later. But good luck to everyone else on the slate. I'll be back on Monday talking about all things you're thinking about. Daily Fantasy, props and pick 'em on Roto Grinders today.